in 1985, as I've told you before, but if you're new, you don't know, but when you talk about the providence of God, as you get older, you look back at your life and you see how all these little interesting, seemingly unrelated things all connect eventually, and you see the hand of God. And if you've lived long enough, you know of what that which I speak. When you're younger, you're thinking God has forgotten you and where is he? But as you get older, you look back and you're like, oh no, he did some amazing things. So when I look at Ruth chapter 2, I think about the providence of God down to the details of your life. And for me, it makes me reflect, because you have to have those times in your life that you stack stones to remember what God did. I do not forget when I left the THD, it's a theology doctorate degree, it's like a PhD. When I was working on that when I was 27 at Dallas Seminary, we had a special needs son, and I couldn't finish that doctoral program in Hebrew. And so it was my lifelong dream to teach Greek and Hebrew, and I had to leave that lifelong dream. And I wasn't on the student track when I left that program. All my other friends were getting placed in churches. I didn't know what to do with myself. I would apply at churches. They would say, what do we do with a 27-year-old guy working on a PhD in Hebrew? And so they would just pass on me, and because I had no experience either working at a church. I didn't know what to do, so I talked to my parents, and Liz and I, with our little son Nathan, moved to California. We went home, and while we were there, I didn't have a job. I didn't know what I was going to do. A friend of mine up in Stockton, California, which is in Northern California, about 10 hours north of San Diego, offered me a job in a warehouse driving a forklift. Oh, that's why I went to school, to drive a forklift for, I think it was $6 an hour. And so I needed a job because I had a kid and I had to take care of him. So I took a job with a company called Visible Computers. My game plan was to live in Stockton, work at Visible Computers in Lodi, and then, you know, send my resume out and find a job. While I was there, my job in the warehouse, because we provided products to office supply stores in Western states, mine was the printing side of the warehouse. So I packed all the loads of paper. So everything was in boxes, 50 to 70 pound boxes. And so all day long, all I did was drive a forklift and pick orders manually, stack them, and then stack them on pallets that were about 2,000 pounds of pallet. And I did like 15 to 20 pallets a day. That was a really fun job. You didn't need a gym membership because you're just stacking all these, bending over, stacking, wrapping them, putting them on the forklift, putting them in the truck. I mean, that's all I did. And so I have a great appreciation for blue-collar workers. I truly do. And so I'm sitting there working in this warehouse, and I'm thinking to myself, God has totally forgotten me. I mean, I went to college, got a degree in the Old Testament, went to seminary for 4 years, got a degree in the Old Testament and Hebrew, and like, huh? And this is what I'm doing with my life? So I wouldn't say I had the best attitude. Have you had an attitude problem before? You're sitting there so quiet going, I would totally never do that. Yeah. But while I was at that warehouse, I noticed that next to the warehouse was a big park, and they had a really great horseshoe pit, like multiple horseshoe pits. I don't know about you. I grew up, all the old World War II guys, they played horseshoes. And so my dad's friends all played horseshoes. I learned to play horseshoes, got pretty good. So I went into the manager's office, Guy Cotton, and I told him with all the guys in the suits, why don't you guys join all of us, forklift guys at the park every day at lunch, and we'll take you guys on in horseshoes. And Guy Cotton, the manager of the plant, said, that's a great idea. So we did that for 1 year. We were at that park like religiously almost every day, us against them. And we beat them so many times. It was so sweet. We did. We put them down. It's probably why I didn't get a raise while I was working there, but we had a lot of fun. But the guy's name was Guy Cotton. And I'm just thinking, I just happened to be working in this warehouse. Now, after a year, I took a job. As you know, I moved to Arizona from there. And I took a job as a youth pastor in a retirement community. Oh, that was smart. But I was desperate. I needed to get a church job. And so I took the job in Sarita, Arizona, near Green Valley, 30 miles south of Tucson. There was a lot of families that ran the city, but they couldn't live in the city. They had to live outside that little city. And so we went there. After I was there for 3 years, so 1989, I was approached to take over a sick church plant in Stockton, California, where we had come from, and to fix it. So they had 19 members, kind of like a couple rows here. That was my church. 19 members, met in the school, and maybe 45 in church on Sunday. That's great. And I played the piano for worship because there weren't any musicians and it was an old 1800 type piano upright. Pedals fell off during the service. Have to stop, take the front of it off, put the dowels back on so I'd have a damper pedal. It was unbelievable. And I took that job. That was from 86 to 1989. God was working in my life. 89, I took that job in that little church plant. 1992, as the church grew, I got a phone call one day from Guy Cotton. Remember him? That 1992, I got a call from him. Well, I hadn't seen him since 1985. And he was the guy beating horseshoes a lot. And so he called me up and he said, hey, I've got a Christian friend. His name is Don Walters. He owns a carpet chain here in Northern California. He's very successful. And he wants to open a carpet chain in Stockton. Now, bear in mind, when I went to Stockton in 1989, I had pulled up in front of an abandoned grocery store. The gates were locked with chains. It was an abandoned store. And I parked my car in front of it and I prayed this. I said, God, I'm in this school with this church plant, but I can foresee us being in this building one day. Could you make this happen? That was in 1989. Fast forward 1992, Guy Cotton, my former boss, calls me and says, hey, my friend Don Walters is opening a carpet store in his chain, and he wants to open in that abandoned grocery store. You know, do you know which one I'm talking about? And he wants to know if I know of anybody that's planning a church that would like to join him in moving into that building. Who would have thought that would ever happen? I didn't think that was going to happen because remember, I didn't have the best attitude, right? I'm driving the forklift all that whole year thinking, I can't believe it. I got a master's degree to play horseshoes. This is unbelievable. And God's connecting all these dots, and eventually he puts me in that store with Don Walters. And eventually, if you fast forward, we were in that store for 17 years. I mean, eventually Don Walters, his company went bankrupt. And there we were positioned with the size of our church now to buy the whole building. And so we got the whole building. I mean, I would say amen to that. God works. So what do I learn from all that? Here's what I learned. When you are bitter because you think God's hand is heavy on you, I know God is lovingly in a providential fashion working a plan to bless you greatly. Did you hear me? I mean, we could just stop the sermon right there. When you think God's hand is too heavy on you, he's like disciplining you, because he does, because he loves you, he's still working at the same time to bless you greatly. Your problem is patience. When's the last time you ever just went to prayer and said, God, I am so excited about praying for patience today? Because you don't do that, right? Because you know if you do that, if you pray it at what time is it right now? 11:35? If you pray this right now, you know at 11:36, he's gonna answer that. Because you're gonna get impatient when this guy's still preaching. I mean, you can't handle it. And so God wants you to be patient because he's working behind the scenes. And that's what we see in this little chapter, Ruth 2. You got Ruth, a Moabitess, leaves her homeland, all of her friends, all of her family, to move to Israel, her enemy, to live with her mother-in-law because she lost her husband. She lost her husband's, his brother died. Her father-in-law died. She's moving back. I mean, it couldn't get worse. They're poor. They don't have jobs. They don't have anything. And while God was working, Naomi's bitter because of all of her losses. And God's like, I haven't forgotten you. I'm working a plan. It's just going to take a while for me to set the plan up because I want Ruth to meet a man. His name? Boaz. And boy, great things are going to come from this relationship. So when you look at Boaz and Ruth, you see two people living in a generous fashion. Ruth is generous because she gives up family and friends and her nation to go move to her enemy's turf to live in Israel. Those two nations had fought against each other for years. And Boaz is going to live generously, as we're going to see, to bless Ruth and Naomi. And because they both get blessed, God's going to look down from heaven and bless both of those ladies and Boaz. So I don't know how you look at your life, but generous living, when you're generous, when God's working in your life, God blesses. When I was driving the forklift all those years, I was also teaching multiple Bible studies in various homes at night. because I'm like, I've got to stay in ministry. When I got an opportunity to do apologetics at University of Pacific to students, I went and taught apologetics at the University of Pacific one day on a Saturday. I mean, I still tried to live generously so that I could see God then do some things as I was being obedient. Just be patient as God works. That's what you're going to find in this little story. Two generous people see the graciousness of God. And that's what we're going to see as the main motif of the passage. Generous living leads to God's gracious blessings. Just stand back and watch God work. In tragedy, God's working something great. What kind of blessings did they receive? Here's a couple of them. When you live graciously and generously, God blesses you with what I would call a rendezvous. I've seen the rendezvous. Have you? Rendezvous. He's going to take Naomi and Ruth and give them a divine rendezvous. It says in verse 1, Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth. And he was of the family of Elimelech. We don't know if he was an uncle, a cousin, like what he was, but we know his name. His name? Boaz. Now, you can't see it in the English text, but you can in Hebrew. In Hebrew, when you read from right to left, the very first word should be a verb. But it doesn't say that in Hebrew. It says, and Naomi. So it's a coordinating conjunction wedded to a non-verb, Naomi. Makes it totally emphatic. So what it means is, chapter 1 ends in the bitterness of Naomi. God's hand is heavy on me. Chapter 2 is like, oh, you need to pay attention. Because this is, let me get you awakened with the grammar. Shake you a little bit. Because you who love grammar will understand it's out of word order. So any Israelite that knew grammar went, hey, he's out of word order. Why'd he do that? He wants you to think about what? About what God did in Naomi's life. And what did he do? Well, he's going to have Ruth run into a family member named Boaz. Now, this is interesting because according to Levitical law, Deuteronomy 25, 5 through 10, and Leviticus 25, verses 35 to 55, if a family member died, like you had a brother and he died, and you're single, your responsibility, according to the Torah, was to marry his wife. So if you had a brother, you better make sure you like who he's marrying. I'm just saying in a practical manner. Because if he passes away, you're next in line to take care of the family. Because if he didn't leave any children, it's all about the furtherance of the family name. Also, according to the Torah, you were supposed to take care of your deceased brothers, etc., his family. So if they were poor without anyone to work and provide for the family, you were supposed to step in. So the fact that Boaz is related to Naomi is very interesting because he's in a position to bless them. So Ruth, being a type A individual, she takes initiative. And you can look at this passage and say, this is a really good chapter to learn some dating techniques. You could, but that's not the main idea of the passage. He's talking about generous living leads to the gracious activity of God to bless you, and he providentially will do it. But yeah, you can get some techniques, but she's a great woman, right? As we're going to learn. Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi when they got to town, please let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I might find favor. And Naomi looked at her and said, go, my daughter. We don't have any food. I'm old and you're young, so go glean. Now, according to the law, passages like Leviticus 19 and chapter 23, at harvest time, if you were a landowner, you were told by the law to help the poor by not harvesting your whole field. So you would leave the outer perimeter of your field unharvested so that the poor could come along and pick grain, whatever, and find food. Now, not every farmer was gracious like that. And so what does Ruth pray? Let me go find some food in a farmer's field who might show grace to me. Meaning he didn't farm all the way to the edges. Let me find a man like that. That's her prayer. Verse 3, she departed and she went and she gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened, I love this, she just happened to come to the portion of the field belonging to who? Boaz. Who was he? In case you forgot. He's of the family of Elimelech. And who was Elimelech? Well, that was Naomi's husband. So do you just think it's accidental that she just happened to be in his field? Of all the fields around Bethlehem, she just happened to wind up there. Do you just think I happened to take a job at Visible Computers, that I just happened to go into the office of the Guy Cotton and actually proposed to him the wild idea, let's play horseshoes. You just happen to think I got to know him? Do you just think he just happened to call me years later because he just happened to have a friend that owned a carpet chain who just happened to want to go to a market that I had prayed over? Do you think that just happened? No? No, who was behind all that? God. God. She was in that field because God, well, he smiled from heaven and said, young lady, you need to go to that field. So she did. Boaz, he's so generous. What does he do? Now, Boaz came from Bethlehem to check out how, you know, the reaping's going. And he said to his reapers, how does he, now, ladies, pay attention as a dating side note. What kind of man are you looking for? A godly man. What kind of man is he? How does he talk to those people who work for him? He's a wealthy farmer. How does he talk to them? He sees them. It's not, hey, how's my profit margin going? What's the tonnage that we've gleaned so far today? Boy, the market's up. I'm going to make so much money. This is great. You guys need to stay on the, how long are the breaks today? You need to shorten those. Get in the field. No, that's not how he talked. What he talked like, may the Lord be with you. Kind of sounds like a Star Wars type thing or, you know what I'm saying? But it's the real deal. It's the living God. May the Lord, the covenantal God, be with you. And they all respect him, so how do they respond? It's in English, you can see it. May the Lord bless you, right? Yeah. It's like at Easter when I say, he is risen. See, you just know. So they knew, when he says this, we stop what we're doing and we tell him the same thing back. So he loved his people, he was a godly man. And I find verse 5 is interesting. And no sooner does he say that, remember, it's about a divine rendezvous that God's going to bless him with. It says in verse 5 that Boaz said to his servant, the head honcho, like El Jefe, the head guy, says to his servant who's in charge of the reapers, what's the question that he notices out of all the people picking in his fields? What's he say? I don't recognize her. Who do you think got him to recognize that woman? God. God told him, hey, check out that young woman. She doesn't look like a Moabitess. Man, just stop for just a minute. When you met your wife and she wasn't your wife and you just met her, did you look at her and go, whoa? Yes, that's the one. Why are you being quiet? Yeah, I confess, that's what I thought. I'm like, yes, God's will for my life. Yeah. Who's that? I don't recognize her. I mean, I know all the poor people in Bethlehem. It's not that big of a place. Who's that? What's a servant say? Because it's about a divine rendezvous. God's going to bless him. He's going to work. He doesn't realize he's going to find his wife out there. Verse 6, and the servant in charge of the reapers answered and said to him, this is amazing. What does he say? She is the young Moabite woman who returned with Naomi. You know, your relative, from the land of Moab. And she said, because he told me earlier in the morning, please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves, unquote. Thus she came and she has remained from the morning until now. She's been sitting in the house for a little while. What kind of house? Her home? No. The little booths that they built around the field with some branches over them to create some shade so that if you got too hot, you went and you sat there in the shade. So what's he say about her? Number one, he says, you're related to her. Number two, she's not a Jew. She's a Moabitess. Number three, she asked permission to glean. What a classy woman. She didn't have to do that because the Torah said she could just show up. She's classy. Guys, I'm just thinking about dating as a side note. What kind of woman are you looking for? This is a godly woman who has some class about her. And she is a hard worker because he tells her she hasn't been in that shade booth very much today. Sunrise, she asked permission. She went out and started harvesting, you know, getting what a poor person could. And she's pretty much been out there from now until lunch. Hardworking woman. This single man began to connect the dots. I mean, what's God doing in my life? Yeah, I've never seen her before. I thought I knew all the ladies in town. Wow. He's single, she's single. He's starting to think divine rendezvous. But he doesn't realize the magnitude of the rendezvous. He just wants to bless her. So when you think about living generously to God, Ruth and Boaz both did, God blessed their gracious living, how they lived toward each other, with an amazing rendezvous where their paths cross. Same thing with my life when I was living in Stockton, where God made my life cross with a guy named Guy Cotton, who then turned and blessed me for many years. The blessing of redemption, verses 8 to 18. Says, then Boaz said to Ruth, this is interesting. First thing he tells her is, listen carefully, my daughter, don't go glean in another field. Hey, just stay put. Furthermore, do not go on from this one, but stay here with my mates. You don't need to go over to Yehuda's field over there. You know, just stay away from his field. Just stay right here. You'll be safe. Now remember, this is the period of the judges when everybody did that which was right in their own eyes. Lawlessness reigned. So he says, if you want to stay safe, just stay right here. Then in verse 9, he says, let your eyes be on the field which they reap and go after them. Indeed, I have commanded the servants not to what? Touch you. So no one's going to bother you. And when you are thirsty, go to the water jars and drink from what the servants draw. No poor person got to do that. He keeps ramping up the generosity. Because when you're going to bless somebody by being generous, it's not usually just like one thing. It's like, no, I need to do this for them, and I need to do that for them. And so he's blessing her. So now he says, well, you can reap in this field behind, you know, my reapers as they're gathering sheaves. You don't have to go to the outer perimeter. You can kind of follow behind the ladies. And by the way, when you get thirsty, don't worry about, you know, bringing your own canteen or anything. You can just walk over to the water that they draw, and I give you permission to drink there. And I've told the men, don't touch her. Wow. How did she respond? Verse 10. What'd she do? Fell on her face. No kidding. She's blown away. Why? Why is he doing this to me? She bowed to the ground and she said to him, why have I found favor in your sight that you should take notice of me since I'm a foreigner? Now, if you read the Old Testament, Deuteronomy chapter 23, verse 5, when the Israelites were heading to Canaan, land of promise, and they encountered the Moabites, they asked for water from the Moabites and the Moabites wouldn't give it to them. I've been in that region before. Jordan, the city, country of Jordan, that's where Moab was, is 1% trees. Translated, there's no trees. There's hardly any trees in Jordan. In Moab, in the south, there were really no trees. And so you needed water, and so they didn't give the Israelites water. They had animosity toward each other. And now all of a sudden you have a Jew, Boaz, saying, I'm gonna bless this Moabitess, and I'm gonna give her water. What's a Christian supposed to be doing? Blessing the nations, mending, bringing peace. That's what he did. Blew her away. She couldn't believe it. Verse 11, Boaz answered and said to her, let me tell you why I'm blessing you. And what does he say? He says, all that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me. So how fast does news travel in a small town? Very fast. They didn't need a telephone, Instagram, nothing. He knew. And how you left your father and your mother in the land of your birth, and you came to a people you did not even previously know. I've seen your sacrifice for my family, and because I've seen that, I'm gonna bless you. I'm gonna be generous towards you. And so he reached out and blessed her because of what he saw. Verse 12, he says, may the Lord reward your work and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge. He says to her, you're like a little bird, and that little bird needs protection. I have an overhang near my porch, and there's a water spout that comes down the one side of it, and there's an overhang over my kitchen window. And up in that little cubby hole, every year, birds build nests in there. And it's the same birds every year for the last 17 years. How long does a bird live? It's just the question I have. Because I'm thinking they must communicate to each other to keep going back there to the same. It's the same kind of bird. This morning when I'm trying to study, I'm hearing the little birds chirping in there. This year, it's the second group of little birds that have produced little babies in there, and they're all chirping and singing, and I'm trying to study. I'm like, whoa! And my wife's like, that is so sweet. And I'm thinking eviction. She's thinking love them. But you think, you know, I'm sitting there this morning reading my notes and I'm thinking, that's like Ruth. She's like a little bird that needs protection. And who prays for protection over her but Boaz, a Jew, and says, you're in the land of Israel now and may God bless you. He's living generously to her. Paul, who understood the generosity of God, says in 2 Corinthians chapter 9, he says, but this I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. He who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. So each one give, he said, when you give, give as you purpose in your heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a Christian with a bad attitude. All right, here comes the offering. It's that basket again. I'm gonna have to put something in. People are probably watching me. I mean, that kind of thing, etc. It's like, no. What should your attitude be? It's the basket. It's an opportunity. When you see the tragedy in your family and you need to give generously, you get excited about it. That was Boaz. He's going, I got family members that are poor. Man, I'm going to bless them. And he's going to do it generously, which means, according to Paul, he's going to reap generously. Boy, does he. Because just to get ahead of ourselves, I mean, tell the rest of the story, he's going to end up marrying her, right? And then she's going to produce a baby, etc. And eventually, she's going to be the forerunner of King David. And if you keep going, well, he's the forerunner of Jesus. And Jesus came from where? The lineage of a Moabite Gentile and a godly young man, a Jew, who loved God. You see, God works among the nations. Boaz is generous to her. Notice at verse 14, mealtime, he says to her, this is lunch. He says to her, come here that you may eat of the bread and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar. I wouldn't eat like that. That's how they ate. Because vinegar's kind of what? It's kind of bitter. So she sat beside the reapers, and what happened? Who fed her the roasted grain? Boaz did. He's like, here, honey. You need some food? He's feeding her. She sat beside the reapers. He served her roasted grain. She ate and she was satisfied and she had some left. Kind of sounds like Jesus, doesn't it? You have this Redeemer coming in and helping the person who's helpless and providing for them. And then there's like the feeding of the 5,000. There's like food left over. And Boaz, in many ways, as we will see when we get to chapter 4, is like Jesus. It says in verse 15, he kept up the generosity thing. When she rose to glean, Boaz commanded a servant, saying, let her glean among the sheaves and don't insult her. And also you shall purposely pull out some of the grain from the bundles and leave it that she may glean and don't rebuke her. This is unbelievable. Don't just glean around the edges and don't just glean behind the ladies collecting the sheaves. He tells the ladies collecting those sheaves, drop a few. You know, when you got a bundle, just make sure you just, I lost five. And just let her pick them up. Do you see the generosity? The generosity. So verse 17 says, she gleaned in the field until evening. She beat out what she had gleaned. That's the winnowing process. And when she was done, it was about an ephah of barley. And she took it up and she went to the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. And she also took it out and she gave it to Naomi, what she had left after she was satisfied. You read this as a Westerner and think, okay, so she had an ephah of barley. That doesn't mean anything. We're moving on. You shouldn't. You should ask yourself, what's an ephah of barley? Well, an ephah of barley was around 50 pounds of winnowed grain. 50 pounds. Now, we know from an ancient Mari text that we have from Egypt that the typical person in the Middle East at the time ate 2 pounds of like grain per day. So you like math, right? So there's Naomi and Ruth, 2 people, 2 pounds of grain equals 4 pounds of grain. So how many days would that last? We'll see. 7 times 4 is 28. 28 times 2 is 6, 56. So that's about 2 weeks of food. Think about it. She gleaned in one day enough food to give them meals for 2 weeks. It's unbelievable. Talk about blessing. God poured blessing all over her. And continue to pour blessing on her. We have another blessing that came, was a blessing of renewal, verses 19 and 20. It says, her mother-in-law said to her, man, you came home with a whole lot of food. Where did you glean today? And where did you work? May he who took notice of you be blessed. What has happened? She sees the blessing of God through the providence of God, through something terrible that has happened, loss of the sons, her husband, and the famine and everything. And now she sees blessing. So Ruth, who dealt with bitterness, is now seeing the blessing of God. And now she's speaking positively. Why? Because God's working in her life. And she says, I don't know who gave you all this food, but whoever that is, may he be blessed. Where'd you go to get the food? Notice what it says. So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked. And she said, The name of the guy with whom I was working, his name is Boaz? Like, do you know him? Serious, Boaz. Everybody knows Boaz. He's our relative. Verse 20, Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, may he be blessed of the Lord who has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and to the dead. So she realizes that God is at work. And so the bitterness that she had begins to dissipate in the light of the blessing of God. I've totally been there. Have you been there? I mean, that was me driving the forklift. Oh God, you have totally forsaken me. Why did I go to school for all those years? Why did I work so hard? Why? I'm driving a forklift. This is all my life amounts to. You ever argue with God and complain? And God looks down from heaven and goes, what are you doing? I'm working out a plan for you to be the pastor of a church of 19 people. After I send you to a church to be a youth pastor in a retirement community. Yeah, I mean, and God's like, just relax. You know, if I could go back and talk to myself as a young man, I would tell myself to relax, trust God more, and wait to see God do great things instead of getting bitter. God took the bitterness of Naomi and turned it into a great blessing. The last blessing that you see from this little story is verses 22 to 23, is the blessing of refreshment. He's going to bring refreshment to the lives of these two women. It says that Ruth the Moabitess said, furthermore, he said to me, you should stay close to my servants until they finished all of my harvest. And then in verse 22, Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that you go out with his maids, lest others fall upon you in another field. So stick, this man's there to protect you. Stay with him. Verse 23, it says, so she stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest. And she lived with her mother-in-law. She went out there for the barley harvest, which started in April, ended around May. And now she stayed out there even longer for the next harvest. So you think about this. April, May, and June, maybe part of July, she's harvesting. If in 2 weeks or if in one day she collected enough food for 2 weeks, how much food do you think she collected in 3 months? I mean, talk about being prepared for the worst case scenario. She probably had food all the way till the middle of December. And where'd all that blessing come from? One man who loved God, loved his family, and generously took care of him. And because he did, God's gonna give him an aha moment and tell him, I think that could be your future wife. You have to stop and ask yourself, why in the world was Boaz so open to dealing with a Moabitess? Because when you read the book of Matthew, chapter 1, verse 5, you will find out that Boaz had a father. His name was Salmon. Salmon had a wife whose name was Rahab, who was a prostitute who lived in Jericho, who came to serve God. And that was his mother. What did he learn as a young man? A Jewish, God-fearing man married my mom with a ton of baggage, and both of them had a great loving relationship. I can do no less. And my life must bless others. And that's how I'm going to choose to live. And boy, did he bless others, did he not? Because through that relationship of his mother and his father, and now him and his and Ruth, will come not just King David, but the King of Kings. Don't tell me God's not working in your life, because he is. Why don't we stand and pray? God, thank you for just reminders of how great you are. You work in all forms of tragedy, all forms of blessing, behind the scenes, working in ways beyond what we can even comprehend. Forgive us when we are impatient with you, challenge you, think that you have forgotten us. You do not forget us, your people, but you work as we live and choose to live generously. You then choose to then bless us ultimately. Thank you for that. May we trust you to that end. Thank you for your greatness. May we be salt and light and great hope and joy to those about us. In Christ's name, amen.